Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 2021 virtual CCB, that's the California Council of the Blind, conference and convention, building our future, remembering our past. This morning, we have two great advocacy workshops for you, and here's advocacy workshop number one. I'm Sarah Harris, First Vice President of the CCB, and I like to call myself the lady that wears lots of hats. And I'm here with Stephen Mendelson, chair of our advocacy committee. And today we're going to bring to you a great panel where we're going to talk about how we do a lot of advocacy in everyday life, right? Like we don't even realize that we're doing it. When I went to my husband and I said, please, please, please do not do any lawn work this weekend, guess what? That was advocacy because I didn't want you guys to hear him with his lawnmower. That's his best friend. But I'm going to go ahead and hand things over to Steve to introduce our panel and to get the fun started. All right, Steve, you're up.
Thank you, Sarah, and good morning, everyone. And as Sarah said, advocacy is something that we all do in everyday life, and we're going to find that out to be the case in a unique way in a couple of minutes. Now, I know some of you probably are saying advocacy, well, I've been there, done that. And some of you are probably saying, oh, advocacy, that's far too intimidating for me. That requires special skills and special knowledge and political adroitness and maximum charm, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it doesn't require any of those things. And to prove it, although many of the people on this panel do have some or many of those things, but it doesn't require those things. And to prove it, we've asked six members of our organization to come forward and relate their own personal advocacy experiences in three sectors. Some will be triumphs, some will be disappointments, but they have all learned from their experience and you will learn from their experience too. And you will see that there are many, many ways to do the advocacy work and many different paths to advocacy success. So we're going to be talking about an employment situation. We're going to be talking about a personal situation. And we're going to be talking about a public accommodations, a retail store situation. And we're going to have two panelists telling us their experiences in each. They're going to have 5 minutes each to speak. And then we're going to do something else. We're going to ask one of you, someone from the audience at random, to come forward and relate a different kind of experience. And frankly, I hope it'll be someone who has a diverse experience, in part because of their cultural background, or perhaps even because of ethnic considerations where there's a complexity, perhaps, that they felt was involved in the situation. So with all that said, and with nothing more to say, we're going to begin with our first panelist, who is Sylvia Blanco. And Sylvia, welcome and thank you for coming and tell us your story.
Good morning, everybody. So my story, I worked in retail for many years, and I received a number of accommodations at this store. One of them was not being... not cashiering. So that was one of them. One of the accommodations I asked towards the end of my time working at this retail store was there was a training I needed to complete, and it was a training that needed to be completed every so often. So I went to my HR. I asked her, okay, this is a training I need to complete. I will need accommodations for it since it would be in a PC, in a computer. And she said, oh, you know what? We don't have it in audio, but I'll have my assistant help you complete it. She'll read the questions for you and the training for you, and you can answer, and she'll submit the answers. And what we decided to do in regards to that training. It played out very differently. She didn't pass on this information to the rest of management. And it was an ordeal when it came down for me to complete this training. They wanted me to stop the training, to stop doing whatever I was doing, because HR her assistant needed to work on whatever she needed to work on. And I needed to go and complete my regular scheduled duties as a sales floor team member. So that was my... that's what happened. Yeah.
So Sylvia, I guess in the end, it wasn't quite as successful as you hoped.
No, there was a lack of communication amongst management. So it started off real well, and it ended up in an unfavorable manner. Yeah.
Well, that is unfortunate, but I really appreciate the effort you made, and I really appreciate your sharing the story with us, because as we know, getting the accommodations we need, especially sometimes in an employment setting, is not easy, and the law doesn't help all that much. So I want to thank you, though, and obviously wish you great success in your future endeavors. We're now going to hear from Harold Lopez, and Harold, we're very grateful as well to have you with us. And why don't you tell us your story?
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. For many, many years, I worked for a wireless company. And when I first started there, it was very interesting because when it came to training, it was pretty much a new, like a pilot program for everyone. And when I got there, I went through training and everything, and I got onto the floor and was working there for maybe about a month. And I met with my supervisor, and come to find out that.
What does my comp bringing about?
Oh, sorry about that. As far as, you know, I spoke to my supervisor, and I came to find out that for our group, which was a visually impaired group, there were no metrics to measure our performance. And you can imagine my surprise, because I was expecting, you know, I was working hard, and it came, you know, came down to the fact that they weren't really keeping score kind of thing. And I was like, well, why not? And they're like, well, you know, we know there's issues with your systems and whatnot. And I remember thinking, you know, if I'm going to be here 8 hours a day and, you know, working, I want my work to count. So I advocated, you know, every day for, you know, you need to put in metrics, you need to put in metrics. And so one day, be careful what you wish for. About 6 months later, they said, okay, so now all the VI people are going to be, have to pretty much do the same thing that everyone who is sighted has to do. And I was like, okay, great. So now, you know, now we can have accountability. But it's one of those things where, yeah, you know, it's kind of like, I guess I think of it as like when you first get on a bicycle, you know, they put training wheels on, they hold your hand through it, and all of a sudden you just take the training wheels away and say, okay, there's a ramp. Go for it and see what kind of tricks you can do off that ramp. And so it's one of those things where we have to, you know, I have to say, okay, yes, there needs to be metrics, but you also have to keep in mind that, you know, there's a middle ground. You know, there are some limitations. So with the constant struggle of going back and forth with them to, you know, kind of, you know, find a middle ground. And at some point, they finally agreed to adjust the metrics for people who are visually impaired. So that way, you know, we could, you know, work hard and meet those requirements and progress in the company. And I'm glad that I did, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't have been able to go from customer service to technical support and then a technical support coordinator. So I think it's important for us to be able to challenge ourselves as well. And because, you know, I could have easily been like, you know, oh, you know, at the beginning, it could have been like, oh, they don't keep score, then this would be nice. They get paid every day. I don't have to worry about it. But I think it's important to, you know, be able to shatter those expectations in regards to what they think you can or can't do with a, you know, a blind individual. And so definitely I say we need to advocate for ourselves, you know, in the employment sector, for ourselves and to ourselves, you know, to hold ourselves accountable as well, to do as much as we can to, you know, further ourselves.
Thank you, Harold. That story has a happier ending, and we're very happy for you. Tell me, were there any other visually impaired people in that work line? And if so, did they join you in the advocacy efforts, or were you sort of doing that on your own?
Yeah, there were several of us. So there was, I'd say maybe a total, at the highest point, there were maybe about 20, 25 people who were visually impaired that worked there. So when I initially started, I'd say maybe the first 10 of us or so were able to, you know, lobby for that. And then once everyone else came on board, yeah, it was already set in place. So that was a nice thing. Yeah, it wasn't at first, it was me. But then as I started talking to other people, they were like, yeah, as new people started coming in and they started realizing the same thing, we kind of all got together and went and talked to management about it. And definitely strength in numbers helps.
And yes. Harold, I have a follow-up question. Was there anyone in that team that was not happy about you asking, starting that conversation about asking for metrics to be used to chart your performance? Did you find anyone that was upset? Did you have to advocate in that way to your fellow employees as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. There was quite a bit of pushback. I mean, for the longest time, we were all in one group. And so that was the other thing, too, that I didn't like, was that we were the VI group. So they had, you know, we were known as that special group. And normally the way it would work is about every 3 to 6 months, they would rotate teams and rotate shifts. And so we advocated for that as well. Like, hey, we want to be on other teams, other people, so we can get to know other coworkers. And they kind of, at some point, we kept pushing, and they finally split us all up. And the people weren't happy about that either. So we no longer were just one group. We were kind of spread out throughout the call center or the area. And I think and that's a good thing, right? Get to know other people. You don't want, because it reminds you of, like, you know, when you're in high school and you all sit together in the same table at the cafeteria, right? Which is great and all, but, you know, how can you expect to, you know, not so much meet other people, but have other people meet you and have them, you know, sharing your experiences if you don't get out there and meet people. So at some point, people just got used to it, and it was what it was. But yes, initially there was some pushback, but, you know, like I would tell them, so, you know, don't you want to progress? Don't you want to move on to a different position? You know, more money, more whatever. And some of them were like, no, and they just were. Some of them actually wound up leaving because of it. But, you know, you do what you can to, you know, try to show people, you know, that, you know, there's more out there than just the bare minimum. So that's all you can do.
Well, you did very well, and we appreciate it. And Harold, if I ever need to form a union, I'm calling you.
You got my number.
Yes, indeed. And thank you again so much. I'd like to now try to invite someone from the audience who might have used a different technique, either to get a good or a bad outcome, but a technique that would be different and of interest to our members. And as I said before, I ideally like someone who came to the situation from a diverse background, and who maybe frankly felt that somewhere in the interaction, some issue of cultural diversity or even ethnicity or race was involved. And as we want to see if there is sometimes what we call an intersectional element to this. So if someone would care to volunteer and talk for a few minutes from that standpoint about their experience, we'd be very grateful.
And we're looking for the realm of employment, right, Steve?
Yes.
Do we have any hands?
Yes, we do. We have a 619 area code. I'm going to ask you to unmute right now. So 619, you can go ahead, please. *6 on your phone to unmute.
Greg, it doesn't look like they're unloud.
Okay. They should. Okay, they should be.
They're still not. You want me to see if I can do it?
Yes, let me just.
Okay, they should be good.
Okay, I'm unmuted now.
Yeah.
My name is Jacqueline, and I live in San Diego, and I had a situation that was real devastating to me. I was an employment supervisor for Independent Living Center in San Diego, and I had staff, and I was writing grants and making them money, and they had a management team. And the management team was all males, and they were males with physical disabilities in wheelchairs or on crutches or some other type of disabling condition, but they were all males. So I asked if I could be a part of the management team because I was the only supervisor at the department, at the agency. And so there was two African Americans, me as a supervisor, one as a bookkeeper that worked in the executive suite. And so the bookkeeper told me of a conversation that the two co-executives had. They said that about my request. They said it'd be a cold day in HELL before they'd have a woman, let alone a Black woman, on their management team. And so when I got that information, I went and I decided that I was going to quit my job. I called the CEO of Eastersil Society, because that's where I had a large grant, and she was very pleased with the work that we were doing, getting people with disabilities employment. And so the CEO of Eastersil called the executive director of the Independent Living Center and told them either they put me on management team or they're going to pull their money and set me up in an agency by myself. So, and they did. They saw it Eastersil's way. They didn't want to lose the money. And I got lots of money from Department of Rehab for them and things of that nature. So it worked out, but it was a struggle. And that's
Jacqueline,
my
thank
story.
You for sharing that story with us. It's an incredible story. And as I say, I can appreciate the terrible anguish that you went through, but your story is a triumph. And it shows that your good work was appreciated, that you knew how to bring that good work to the attention of the right people at the right time. It's a very good story. And thank you for sharing with us. And thank you for persevering through the travail. Now, I guess we're going to go on now and move to a personal situation. And of course, we all have our personal situations, but we're looking here for situations. Well, we're going to let our two panelists, if they're here, tell us about their situations themselves and what advocacy they needed to do and how they did it and how it worked out. First, we're going to hear from Patty Nash. I hope Patty is here. Hello? Hello?
Hello. Do we have Patty? I think we're missing Patty, Steve. Who else did we have for this part?
Well, we have Gail Crossan.
Gail, are you here?
Either Patty or Gail are in the audience. You can raise your hand because we don't have you on stage. So if one of you is in the audience, would you please raise your hand?
Steve and Sarah, this is Gabe. Would you like me to see if I can get hold of Patty and...
Yes,
I don't know if I have Gail's number, but I can give Patty a call for sure.
I'll give you both your numbers if you want.
This is Andrea. Is that Gail Crossan?
Yes.
Okay, I can reach out to her.
Thanks, Andrea.
No problem.
Okay. We're on it.
Awesome. And then, Steve, why don't we go ahead and maybe move on to our next scenario?
I'm sorry, sir. I couldn't hear you say again.
And maybe why don't we just go ahead and move on to our next scenario, and we'll have Andrea go second with that one.
Yes,
and then
that's a good
we'll
idea.
Come back around. Perfect.
Okay. Yes. Well, our next scenario is a public accommodation scenario. And we're talking about a situation which, again, is probably familiar to most or all of us. You go into a store. At least some of us remember what it was like to go into a store. Used to go into a store, and maybe we will again someday. But you go into a store and you want to buy something. You're a good customer. You're money is as good as anybody else's, but you need to touch the thing. It might be a piece of technology. You have to figure out if it's going to be accessible, or it may just be an avocado, and you want to see if it's ripe or not. But they say, no, you can't touch it. It's wrapped in plastic, whatever. You have to buy it before you can touch it. I just want to look at it closely. I'm a person with low vision. Maybe I can look at it. No, we can't let you have it, hold it in your hand. Sorry, you have to buy it first. So we're going to talk about the kind of advocacy that we might try and that might hopefully be successful in a situation like that. And our first advocate will be Diane Deutsch. Welcome, Diane, and thank you for being with us.
And Diane, you'll need to unmute.
Steve, real quick, this is Andrea. Before you start, Gail says she's trying to get in and has the wrong Zoom information. I don't know what's going on. Gail has issues even, you know, with our meetings trying to get in. Because she's getting in by phone.
So Rob, can you maybe shoot it to her again, please?
Because I thought I might be first, and I didn't want to get involved in that, and then you have you call on me and not be able to do it.
No, I understand. Thanks.
The phone number and the code. Okay. And don't worry about the participant code, Rob. Just send her the regular access information, and then Greg can unmute her.
She doesn't have email, so somebody's going to have to call her. Yeah, someone's going to have to get on the phone with her.
All
right. Do you need a phone number?
No, we can't do that right now, Andrea. Why don't you go ahead and do that? Because we're going to have you go last. So go ahead and give her a call. Thank you, guys.
This is Gabe. I just tried calling Patty, and it went straight to her voicemail, so I left her a message asking, checking that everything's okay, and then if she had any questions, so go ahead and reach out to me, and then I can help facilitate stuff.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks, Gabe.
You're welcome.
So I guess, Diane, tell us your story.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. This is a personal story. Since I lost my vision, I have needed more than once to go shopping. And I don't do well if I can't feel what I'm buying. I went into one of the big box stores in our neighborhood, and I needed to buy underwear. And I said, I want a specific type. I don't do well with elastic. My body doesn't like it. I broke out terribly from pantyhose, so I stopped wearing them years ago. So I don't do elastic well. I want one of the new microfiber fabrics. And of course, everybody who goes shopping for clothes, and especially underwear, they're all packaged and they're hanging on this huge wall. All different sizes, all different types. I described exactly what I wanted. And I said, and the gal said to me, okay, well, here's some. I said, yes, what does it look like? And I need to feel it. Oh, well, I can't open the package. I said, so how am I supposed to know if I even want to buy this? Oh, well, the other thing they never tell you is what color it is. The last package I bought had 10 pair of underpants in it. They were all different colors. I assumed they were all one color. Surprise! Eventually, I convinced her that she would open the package for me so that I could feel what it was. I absolutely have to feel what type of elastic it has, if it has any. And I tried, she opened a few packages for me. She said, oh, you know what? I can just close these up. Nobody will know they've been opened. We can use tape on them. Sometimes we get things back and we have to tape those packages shut. So this will work. So she did open the package for me, found the right size, and I felt it. And the elastic at the top is maybe, it isn't even, I don't know, it isn't even a quarter of an inch wide. It's less. It's more like an eighth of an inch wide. It's very light. It's not, it doesn't pull the top of the fabric tightly together. It's looser. And it was exactly what, she found exactly what I wanted after we'd gone through a number of different styles. And I purchased it. And it has been absolutely wonderful. But in order to get somebody to open a package for you, it's like, I'm sorry, I can't see it. I need to feel it. I don't know what this is. And you ask them, do you buy things sight unseen? Well, no. I said, good, neither can I. And it's worked. And I've done it frequently, and I really haven't ever had any terribly big problems with it.
That's a great story. It sounds like your greatest advocacy triumph there was to get the clerk on your side, so to speak, to get the clerk to understand how reasonable your request was and how much you were only asking to live in the world the way that he or she did.
It's like when I'm on the phone with somebody trying to pay a bill and I say, okay, I always start out with, I'm blind. And when whoever I'm talking to starts telling me to do things, I said, look, I want you to do something for me. You're in front of a computer, right? Yeah, I'm in front of a computer. Okay, close your eyes. Now, tell me what you see on your computer screen. Nothing. I said, great, that's what I see all the time. And you'd be surprised how quick they are to help me with whatever I need to pay my bill.
Well, you've obviously been very successful, and we appreciate You're sharing both the strategy and your successes with us. And if I ever need a clothing consultant, I'll be contacting you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Diane.
You're welcome.
And now I guess we'll continue on the public accommodations theme, and we'll turn it to Andrea DeClotz. And Andrea, we want to welcome you and as thank you as well for joining us and sharing your experience and hopefully your triumphs with us this morning.
Thank you so much. Steve, good morning, all. Good morning, everybody on ACB Radio. Thank you, Sarah, for asking me to participate. I want to just make a quick comment on what Diane said. I run into that all the time on the phone with people who, after I've told them I'm blind, well, can you see what's in the blog? You know, it's like they're on script and they have not heard me say that. It just has gone right by them. So I think her idea maybe of taking a more direct approach is great. I'm going to try that and see how well that works. My story is kind of an older story, and in a way that makes it even better because this was back in the early 2000s, maybe 2000, 2001. I wanted to purchase a laptop computer. And if any of you used JAWS in those days, you remember that it could be quite finicky about the computer's sound card. This was back when we had Dr. JAWS. And if you started to load JAWS, it would do a kind of a diagnostic scan to see if it was compatible with your hardware. So the point was that if I was going to buy a computer from a retail outlet, we had to be certain that it would work with JAWS. And if you purchase a laptop, often if you get it home and decide it's not for you and you don't want to keep it, there is a restocking fee, which can be substantial for them to put it back on the shelf. So my husband and I went to Best Buy, and Best Buy was relatively new then. I don't know how long he'd been around, but not too terribly long. We went to our local Best Buy and we looked at a couple of different options and kind of decided what I thought I wanted. We narrowed it down and we got one of the managers, and this was on a Saturday, so they were fairly busy. We got one of the managers and explained to him what our issue was. And he said, well, I can't do anything about this now, but if you will come back when we open on Tuesday morning, I'm here on shift. I will take the display shelf apart and get the computer out for you and let you try it on one of the demo units to make sure that it's the computer is compatible and that you're able to purchase it and that you can use it. And we were just thrilled because we didn't ask specifically for him to do anything. We just were, you know, how could you work with us? Could, you know, so that I don't have to return the computer if it doesn't work. We went back on the Tuesday morning. It took him probably close to an hour to get, because you're dealing with these big high metal display shelves, and they had to basically take a good part of the display apart to get that unit, because those units are all bolted or connected in some way to the shelving so that they won't, so people won't steal them. And he was more than willing to help me. They were just really, really great. They actually were super interested in what I was doing and how we installed the software to see if it worked, which in fact it did. And I did end up purchasing the computer from them. And it was that was probably my first experience of really thinking about accommodation, advocacy for myself. Hey, this is what I need. You know, you may get a sale out of it. How are you willing to help me? And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Best Buy because they really went out of their way to assist me. And they were and it was his idea. We didn't ask him, hey, would you be willing to, you know, he said to me, this is what I can do. And I think that was at that time was, you know, fairly forward thinking on his part.
Andrea, that's a great story. Not only because of your ingenuity and not only because of the positive outcome, but because it reveals something else that we often forget about, or at least I feel I often forget about it. Too often I frame the situation as willingness or unwillingness to provide the accommodation. But as often maybe, it's a question not of willingness or unwillingness so much as it is of how to do it, of you were fortunate that you had a manager who not only was willing to do it, but who knew how. And you might well, yes, on another day, found another manager who was equally willing but didn't know how. So I guess when we talk about these kind of accommodation situations, particularly as they relate to technology, the question of method is sometimes as important or maybe even more important than the threshold question of willingness.
Absolutely. And let me just say that I think that sometimes we tend to approach this from a negative perspective. Like we think automatically we're going to get turned down. And I think if we can tell people what we need,
Margie D has joined the meeting.
Often that's sufficient. I'm thinking also of like, because I travel a lot independently. I've flown quite a bit in my life. I've flown cross country. Often if you just tell people what it is, how they can help you, and you present it in a positive light, that's often enough to get, you know, exactly what you need. They just don't know. It's not that they're unwilling. They don't know where to start. So if you can say, hey, this is what I need, and this is how I think you could help me, you know, are you willing to do this? My experience has been that often it's really a matter of communication.
That would be a wonderful segue to our next scenario. But before we do that,
you do have one raised hand. Sorry.
Yes, I was about to say that. Before we do that, we want to get a perspective from the audience. So welcome, whoever you are, and thank you for joining us.
We have 510. With ending in 4-2, you can go ahead and unmute, please.
Hi, this is Patty. I've been here all along, but I couldn't unmute myself for some reason.
Oh, Patty, welcome.
Hey, do you have time for me still? Or?
Oh, we will do. We're going to go back to the personal in a minute. We're just going to we just took them out of order because you.
Okay, well, you can call on me and I'll be here. Thank you.
All right, great. So anyone like to bring to bear a different perspective on the two stories we just heard about public accommodations?
I'm not seeing any raised hands right now.
Let me ask a provocative question then. Is there anybody here who, any blind or visually impaired person, who's aware of ever having been surveilled because of some kind of profiling in the store? Fortunately, I guess not.
We do have a hand raised. DJ, you may go ahead and unmute.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. No, I've been surveilled, not always knowing that I have been, but it's been both good and bad in terms of having, you know, somebody like keep ending up on the same aisle as you, and you start. Now I have a little vision, and so I could see, you know, the clothing, the, you know, similarities. I can't see eye color, but you know, I can tell it's the same person. But I have had people then ask me if I needed help when I actually did, and other times, you know, and they helped me, and it was fine. And other times, nothing happened as a result. So I think it can work both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yes. Thank you, DJ. I appreciate that. As you say, it's a double-edged sword.
Can I comment about any of the other people's
if you like,
reports?
Sure. Go
real
ahead.
Quick. Okay. Sure. And I think people who have worked in retail relatively, maybe say in the last 10 years or so, they can all tell you that that they can open up packages for you to see. And the employees, if like Andrea said, you explain what you're needing, and like Diane, I think it was Diane, that then people become more receptive and that, and because they can and they can close stuff back up. If it's something that they can't then sell, it, you know, they have other shelves they can put stuff on, you know, for that reason. My daughter worked in Walgreens for years and used to tell me how that worked and that she'd open up things. And she worked in cosmetics and that. So anyway, that's, I just wanted to add that as well. It's something they can all do. All right.
Appreciate that. It's good. It's good to know. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
It's important that we'll all keep in mind. So this has just been a wonderful segue into our final segment, which is what we call personal situations. Maybe some family member or a friend or neighbor is a little bit too helpful, a little bit overbearing, probably means well, but it can create all kinds of awkwardness. And again, we all deal with these situations in everyday life. And I'm going to have Patty go first and tell us about her situation. And then if we have Gail here, she'll tell us about her. So let me introduce and welcome and thank Patty Nash.
Whether we like it or not, there are people who think they know better than we do what we need because we're blind. And so we can be taken advantage of or told what to do, but certainly they know better than we do what we need. And so, like, for instance, if you, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things which keep us from advocating for ourselves, which is fear of what people will think, the time it will take to resolve an issue, the cost and the feeling of unworthiness or even of shame or just feeling isolated. Of course, we know that in CCB, we're not isolated. We can seek legal assistance, garner support and get feedback from others and gather information about the situation. The situation and the laws govern it. It's not news to anyone that here in the Bay Area, the cost of living is very high. And I've been in my apartment for 12 years, and my rent has doubled in that time. And one of the increases was for $400, and I was told very offhandedly that it's a prime location. And I didn't feel that I had the wherewithal to move, and I liked where I was, so I paid my rent and went without a little more. But right after that, the new management decided that they were going to charge me for utilities, which were not included in my lease. And they were going to fluctuate each month, so you didn't know what your rent would be every month. And I didn't think that was right. And I think Michael Finney had said on his program that if you didn't receive a bill for a utility directly to you, that you didn't have to pay for it. But I'm also belong to a group that, excuse me, of senior and disabled people, which deals with renters' rights. And I know there was a legal service which could assist with tenant and other issues for low cost or no cost, so I went there. I didn't have a copy of my lease, and when I asked the owner for one, she said that all the paperwork had gotten lost when she came in on board. And the attorney that I visited with said I did indeed qualify for their assistance. She stated that she would never take an action without first letting me know. Because, of course, the bottom line was my fear of maybe being evicted. So I went ahead and paid these payments and for a long time. And the manager sort of tried to intimidate me by saying I was the only tenant who didn't want to pay the charges. And when it turned out that almost all of the tenants had complained and were taking action, and I received a check for $1,000, and I feel that because my actions may have assisted other tenants as well and inspired advocacy. And for that reason, we don't ever want to give up or feel that we can't. We can be empowered, and in our meetings, of course, we always are. And we know that we have support. We need to advocate, whether it is to receive better medical care, to fill out necessary forms, get our groceries on time, or getting what we ask for, getting a safe signal so that children can cross on their way to school, or dealing with an inaccessible website and getting our COVID vaccinations. But unfortunately, the work for advocacy is always ongoing. There is now in our city an effort being made to have renters pay the cost of capital improvements after we've had a victory in rent control. And, you know, the landlords already probably get a tax incentive, so they might even be double dipping. So we have to always be confident that we need to keep working. And that's...
Well, that's a great story, Patty. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to commend your tenacity. And it's interesting how you understood the importance of group activity, of concerted activity, both in CCB and among renters. And all I can say is, if I ever have any trouble with our co-op manager, I'm calling you. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Patty. So is there anyone that's up here on our panelist side that would like to maybe share a story about an experience where, you know, you had to tell someone really close to you that you really loved and respected, thanks, but no thanks.
Back off.
Anybody have a story like that that they'd like to share? We'd love to invite you. Don't everybody unmute at the same time.
I have one.
Go ahead.
Oh.
Well, I was going to go to the bank with a friend of mine, and we went together. And when we got to the teller window, she came right up next to me and wanted to see what I was doing. And I said, oh, you can go into the other line and get your business done while I have mine, because I really need your help. Thank you very much, but I appreciate it. And I don't know, maybe because I had a hard time saying that, even though I knew that it wasn't right that that would have happened. She heard and she listened and she didn't mind.
And, you know, and that's the truth, you know, Patty, is sometimes people, they just don't know, and we just need to tell them. And once we do, you know, that's what makes the difference, because then they learn, you know, how they can best support us. Right?
Well, and it didn't impact our friendship one little bit. I mean, she was fine with it.
I mean, I can imagine somebody using the same words, but maybe in a different way and with a different result. So I think probably how you said it is very important, too.
Steve.
Yeah.
This is Larry.
Yes, Larry.
I usually tell people when I'm talking to them, for instance, if somebody wants to help me with my mail or whatever, we already have it agreed upon. For instance, the person who's helping me and helped Melinda when she was alive, we asked her to come over and she knew exactly what we wanted. But there have been occasions when somebody's, for whatever reason, walks over and thinks that our kitchen is theirs, and they pick up something and they begin to tear it open. It's happened a couple of times, and I knew exactly what they were doing. They were trying to help open mail to see what was junk and what was normal and usable. And in both cases, we both agreed that that wasn't going to happen. So we said, well, what are you doing? Oh, we just wanted to help you with your mail. I said, okay, you need to ask me first if you want to help me with mail. If I want you to, we certainly will do that. That's perfectly fine. But we need to be the one who decides whether that's actually going to happen. And they said, oh, and they didn't even think about it. They were just trying to help. So again, it's all in the approach. And then from that point on, they said, do you need any help with mail?
That's a great story. And that really does illustrate the point very well. If you said, get out of here, what are you doing? It would have been a very different outcome.
I'm turning my guide dog loose on you.
Yeah, right.
you do have several raised hands in the audience.
We might as well hear from a few people. We'll still wait for Gail, and hopefully we'll get her. But while we wait, let's hear from a few of our audience members.
Okay. Let's see. We have a 5 ending in 057 510 ending in 057. You can go ahead and star 6 to unmute, please, and share.
Hi. With us. This is Maureen from Berkeley, Bayview chapter. I had a situation recently where I had to go to the hospital and have a medical procedure done, and the medications they were giving me were not, I was not responding to them well, and they were adding more and more and more, and I was getting sicker and sicker. And ultimately, I ended up having to leave the hospital, even though I was still, you know, obviously in the middle of being treated, against medical advice. And thank God I knew that there was a form that I could fill out. And so I had to wait till the next shift of nurses came on and basically say to them very quietly, you know, please get me a copy of this form. I need to fill it out because I am leaving. And my intention was, of course, that I went to the doctor and got treated somewhere else where I got much better treatment. But sometimes it's really hard to advocate, especially when you're sick. And, of course, against the nurses and doctors on duty, and against maybe even your friends that might tell you, you know, the right thing to do would be to not leave and you need this treatment. And I had no intention of not getting my treatment, but I just couldn't see myself getting it there, and it worked out very well.
Maureen, that's a great story. And we're obviously glad that you got the treatment that you needed. But again, you illustrate something else very important, which is that success and advocacy here depended upon your having some particular knowledge and knowing about that form and knowing to ask for it. And so it just emphasizes the importance, whenever possible, of having as much knowledge about the situation and about the options that are available as possible, so that we can inform people in an effective way, that we can couple our requests with information that will help them to comply with those requests. That's very important. Very good. Thank you. And we're glad you're well, and we're glad you're here. Thank you.
Okay. And up next, we do have Charlene. Charlene, you should be able to talk, so you can unmute. Charlene? Okay.
Charlene, you should have a little pop-up window, and you need to click unmute.
You
I just got the pop-up window. I just got
there
the pop-up
you go. And I'm glad you made it to Zoom. Welcome, Charlene.
Thank you. Yeah, we got it taken care of. Anyway, I have a couple of different things that I've done for advocacy. One is working with the airports and the SkyCaps, and the other one would be an accessibility one. Do you want one or both?
Well, I don't know what our time is, but let's hear about the airports first, because we haven't had
One of the things I do when I go to an airport, they want to bring the wheelchair. I tell them, thank you, but I tell them what I need, which is just somebody to either have my dog follow, or to have somebody I can, you know, use as a sighted guide. And I'm finding a lot of times some of them really feel like they need to be, you know, do something, and they don't think being a guide is that much. So I tell them, but if you'd like to, you can carry my carry-on for me to the gate. And that kind of seems to help them feel more relaxed about doing it. They feel like they're doing something more than just being there. So their attitude changes.
That's very interesting. I think that probably many of us have had that similar experience. I've actually had a couple of the airport service people tell me that they're afraid they would get in trouble, that if anything happened to me, I wasn't in the wheelchair, that they'd get in trouble. And I'd say, don't worry, nothing's going to happen to me. And if it does, I'll testify for you. Sometimes there are rules that we don't know about that cause people who we interact with on various levels to be fearful. Not fearful because we're blind, but fearful because of the rules that they operate under, the insecure jobs and so on and so forth. But we just handle it as best we can. You also bring up the interesting distinction here, Charlene, between what I'll call individual advocacy or self-advocacy on the one hand and system advocacy on the other. And I like to believe right. that whenever we engage in individual advocacy and self-advocacy on our own behalf, to the extent that hopefully some lesson is learned by somebody or some result is achieved that will have some residual value, that we're doing system advocacy too. But
I do notice that now in on some of the airlines, not all of them, but when you when you make a reservation and you go into the accessibility, and they will ask you, do you need a wheelchair? And you can, if you do, you check it. So you can put that up front so that they know that you're not needing the chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to, the freedom from being forced to use them, we're going to call that the Charlene Ornelas rule. Thank you very much, Charlene. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Charlene. And I hear that we have Gail. And Gail, if you're out there in the audience and if you can raise your hand, that'd be super.
I was waiting on a city bus after a very long, cold, wet day, hungry, tired, and grumpy. We'll start there. And it pulls up, and I get on. Now, at those days, I had a cane and a rollabout that I'm dragging about, and I'm heading for a particularly favored seat, which was empty. A gentleman got up immediately, moved himself from the disability section of the bus, and planted himself in the seat that I wanted. And I wasn't really happy about that. And then he came by and he said, hey, there's your seat, and tried to grab me. And I went right by him and said to myself, I don't want anything to do with this, and found myself a seat somewhere else. And then he's, see if I ever help another blind person.
Oh, yeah. Well, in a situation like that, you say to yourself, I'd like to do some educational outreach, but it's pretty hard to figure out how, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure he was educable, actually. But at this point, if he had just said, ma'am, would you like this seat? We could have worked it out from there. And I could have said, no, thank you. I wanted the one you were moving into.
I've seen that sort of thing happen where the entire bus has turned into a referendum on my worth as a human being.
Oh, no.
Not much fun, but no, from the standpoint of advocacy, you at least got the seat that you wanted, and you didn't do anything wrong at all.
Actually, I didn't. He stayed where he had moved himself to, and I was further back. I just wanted to get away from him at that point.
We used to have a saying in New York with people like that, saying, "Don't make eye contact."
No, I didn't. Put my head down, and if I could have, I would have probably clobbered him with the bag that I was dragging behind me, but I didn't.
Well, if I ever need a feistiness consultant, I'm calling you, Gail.
Oh, don't talk about feistiness. I am so sorry about this whole mess, but anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Gail, we got you here, and that's what matters. And like Steve said, thank you so much for sharing. And Steve, we have about, I'd say, 2.5 minutes left if you wanted to give any final thoughts.
Well, I guess I just want to reiterate what I hope this whole panel has demonstrated, which is that advocacy comes in all kinds of forms, in all forms, in all sizes and shapes, and in every situation. And really, in the end, what it comes down to is doing what we think is best and what we think is right, and what we would want other people to do or say to us. And I think in those situations, we won't always have success, as we know. For example, we've had a couple of stories here. Where good advocacy techniques did not yield success through no fault of the person. And I also want to mention again the idea that system advocacy, which is maybe a little bit more remote to us, from the standpoint of changing laws or changing policies or changing procedures, is really, in the end, nothing more than an extrapolation of the kind of individual advocacy we've been talking about for the most part here today. We do it in groups, or sometimes we do it in emails or letters, or even in testimony, but fundamentally it's no different. It's saying what we need, what we want, why it's right, and why it's beneficial to everybody. And we're asking people to meet us on a level playing field of reason and human dignity that we have set forth. So I want to thank all our participants again very much for sharing with us, for opening themselves up in this personal way. And we can't express our appreciation enough, and also for the people in the audience who participated as well. So I think that's about it from my standpoint.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. This was great. And thank you to all of our panelists. And, just remember, assertiveness goes a long way. And we heard that throughout, you know, all of our panelists were very assertive in their advocacy and, you know, didn't go in screaming and yelling and, you know, guns blazing. And that really, you know, says a lot about, you know, who we are and, you know, what we're looking for, which is just really the right support and the best support. And, you know, we can all make a difference in our own little way. So thank you,
Sarah.
Thank you to everybody.